This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblé.
And I'm Yannick Magnan.
And what's our topic this week, Yannick?
Unbundling.
Ooh. Do we have any follow-up before you start?
We have quite a bit of follow-up. So starting off with the Retina MacBook, which will never die. The Retina MacBook benchmark showed up in the Geekbench database, between our last episode and now. And it turns out the performance is not in line with the 2012 MacBook Air, but instead the 2011 MacBook Air, which is ironically the machine I'm recording on right now.
Yeah, but they said it is at the level of the build-to-order option of the MacBook Air 13-inch model in 2011, which was a Core i7. I don't know the speed by heart, but it should be...
I think
it
was 1.7 gigahertz.
Yeah, so it should be comparable to the base model of 2012 and the high-end model of 2011 or something like that.
Which is still being outsped by an iPad Air 2. But let's not talk about that, even though you're paying way too much for a machine that runs that performance level. Next up, our pal Jay-Z introduced a new service between our last episode and now, and I heard you have quite a bit to say about it.
Yes, yeah, so like you said, Jay-Z launched a new streaming service called Tidal.
Well, it's not really new. He relaunched it.
Exactly. So it was two services called Tidal and Wimp. That they are under the Swedish umbrella called Aspyro. So it's kind of weird. It's mostly buying companies and rebranding stuff. But the big push on that service is there's a lot of pop artists that has stake in the company. Big names like Beyonce, Rihanna, Kanye West, Coldplay, Nicki Minaj, Deadmau5, Daft Punk, Madonna. So, and rumor says that any big artist that put its name in the company has a stake in it too.
Right, about 3% from what I've heard, excluding Jay-Z, of course, because he's the main guy.
Yeah, but which is funny because he has, 48%? So he's not the main shareholder. He is the main shareholder, but
he owns the most, but he's not majority of the shares.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. But I guess let's call it their big feature is they don't have any free tier.
That's not really a feature. It's a lack of a feature.
Yeah, that's why I said let's call it the feature quote. But they do have two plans. The typical $9.99 per month. And they have one called the iFi plan, which is $19.99 per month. So they try to sell an iFi plan with higher quality. And it seems to be quite, not problematic, but quite suspicious a little bit. People are raising issues about, is it really iFi or not? And I guess we'll see in coming weeks if the iFi qualifier is right or not.
Have you been to their website and tried their blind test of their hi-fi service?
I haven't tried the blind test, but...
Well, so the funny thing is, if you actually fail to identify which one is hi-fi, it blames your audio equipment. It's like, surely your audio equipment is plugged in wrong or something. You're doing something wrong. Please make sure that everything is plugged in right, or that you're wearing your headphones on your head and not on your feet.
Yeah, I saw a screenshot of that on the Create Digital Music website. The guy or the person that wrote an article was mostly speaking about that. Their website has, not, I won't say fishy, but sounds fishy claims. Like, you're reading those and you're looking at that blind test, and when you make the wrong choice, they blame something else and not their music. So, we'll see. And in the show notes, I have a Verge article that is the promotion, the teaser video. I know that you watch not the live.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What the hell did I watch?
So was it the live presentation or the press holders? Whatever.
Right. Let me explain a little bit. So Tidal had this, they called it a press conference, but I don't actually think there was any press there. I think it was just Tidal employees in a room somewhere. And on the stage, they call out all the artists one by one, and it takes 15 minutes because there are a billion artists who are onto this thing. And then Alicia Keys comes on, and she reads this, like, really long manifest thing.
Oh, my God, I forgot she was in the list. I have my notes right now, and she is in the list. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, which Alicia Keys, by the way, ex-employee at BlackBerry. let's never forget that.
Is she really ex-employee at BlackBerry? Or?
Yeah, she used to be their creative director at BlackBerry, which was the most confusing.
No, but I thought she was still at BlackBerry.
Oh, is she still at BlackBerry? I don't know. I just assumed that she wasn't because BlackBerry isn't doing a shit. But anyway, yeah, so Alicia Keys gets out on stage and starts reading this crazy document, which is basically like artists standing against the streaming services of today, which are run by tech companies. And in fact, there's a video I linked in the show notes, which they showed at the end of the press conference, which was like Jay-Z invited all these artists into like some conference room, fancy conference room with a teleconferencing thing so that they could talk to like artists that were in other parts of the world. And basically they had this huge meeting which was like, we need to stand up to the tech industry and take back the conversation about music and all this revolutionary crap.
That's the video I was referring to in the Verge article. It's like a small get together, and
yeah, that's what they closed the presentation with.
Oh my goodness.
And I was looking at this and cringing the whole time because these artists, I don't think they realize that they think they're a little bit more important than they actually are, and they think that the tech industry doesn't take musicians seriously. And obviously, like, they think this because on Spotify and on other streaming services they get a tiny cut of what is actually being made. But, so the first thing is...
Speaking of the tiny cut, there was a Storify from Mint Royal speaking about the royalties from Tidal and Shopify. So,
Spotify, not Shopify.
Oh, pardon me, yeah. I always mix those. So, yeah, Spotify. And Mint Royal also has 3x more royalties from Tidal than Spotify. So they were having a 0.34 pounds per stream compared to a 1.55 from Tidal. But obviously, the number of streams per month was pretty low. So it was, I think they did that for the month of January. And they had 141 streams from the Tidal service compared to 58,212 streams from Spotify. So it's like a mere $2.10 compared to $250.
Yeah.
But to put it in perspective, to get the same $250 from Tidal, you will have to stream 16,000 times compared to the 58,000 times.
Right, but the thing that we bring up after this is like, well, is that sustainable as the service grows, if it actually manages to grow, which some people have doubts about, because the content on there isn't really the exclusive content that they have on there, which is like their big deal, right? So they're saying, okay, we're going to give them high quality content that they can't get anywhere else, which is true, except that people can't hear the difference. And we're going to give them exclusive content, which is true, except that all their exclusive content is also found on other services. Which is... I mean, the only thing on Tidal right now, which is not available elsewhere legitimately, is... a home video of Beyonce's new song Die With You, which she recorded for Jay-Z and Beyonce's wedding anniversary. And I mean, like, that is literally a phone that Jay-Z video that Jay-Z took on his phone and uploaded himself to the service. So of course that's why it's not on iTunes or anywhere else. But like, that's the only exclusive content right now on Tidal that can't be found legitimately. And the problem is, like, all of these artists are still tied up with their record labels, which is a part of the reason why they aren't getting their big cut from streaming services. And B, the record labels don't want necessarily exclusive things like this because it limits how much money they can make on it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, even if they launch a new service, all the complaints we did in my episode about the streaming services still applies to them. Like, I remember linking you to a random tweet from a random person mentioning that their default, like their normal $9.99 per month account has shittier audio quality than Spotify.
Right, but right, it was something like 96 kilobits per second, which is sort of embarrassing given the whole hi-fi thing. Though I should point out that this was not on the hi-fi plan. But
yeah,
that,
of course.
To clarify, that is just on mobile. If you do it on the desktop, you get 320 kilobits music.
Yeah, but just saying that you can get the 320 kilobits per second on mobile on Spotify.
Yeah, that's sure. But like, I can also understand from their perspective, well, we don't want to waste your bandwidth on mobile.
Yeah, like, I know.
And on Spotify, I believe, at least when I used it, that it was a checkbox that you had to go into the settings and say, I want the high quality audio. But at least the option was there. Whereas with Tidal, as far as I know, it's not there.
Yeah, it is an option. There's three settings, if I recall correctly, like suboptimal, recommended, and then the full on let's blow up your bandwidth.
Right, on Spotify, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually interested in Tidal because the UI of the app actually looks pretty interesting, so I might be trying out the free trial. I doubt I'm going to stay very long because I don't really care for many of the artists on that service, but we'll see.
Yeah, last point I want to make is another random tweet that I saw this week said that if you look at the list of pop artists that they have, they kind of have the big name right now in each genre of music.
Right.
They have rap, they have techno, they have pop music, they have rock, I guess. Yeah, maybe. They have old person, aka Madonna, and that's it.
They have old person. That's mean. She's still sort of in pop music. It's not as good as in the 80s, but it's still there.
That's why I said old person.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, Madonna fans.
You mean me?
I'm sure she has more fans than just you.
I'm sure she does. Is that all for the follow-up?
I think so.
Okay, so let's get to the main topic, which is oddly in relation to last week's topic, last episode's topic about dealing with new versions of software. This episode, we're going to be talking about unbundling, or the somewhat controversial practice of taking a monolithic app on mobile and splitting it into smaller ones. We've been wanting to talk about this for close to a year now, but obviously we hadn't started to record the podcast until a little later than that. And the timing just really lined up really well because Facebook Messenger has a bunch of new changes that they announced at the F8 conference recently, and that's what we're going to be talking about later on. But before that, let's talk about something that happened almost exactly a year ago, Swarm and Foursquare. So on May 1st, 2014, Foursquare announced that they were splitting their main location service into two services. They split into Swarm, which is the check-in service focused on finding out where your friends are and what they're doing. And then there's Foursquare, which retained its old name, and that is a recommendation and tip engine closer to what you would expect from Yelp. And that entire database is based on years and years of user check-ins because they found out like what places a certain group of people who go to X place also enjoy and correlated those things behind the scenes and wound up with this huge recommendation database. Now, I don't know if you remember a good view of the old application.
I remember that the old application was the reason why we wanted to talk about unbundling. Especially at that time, like a year ago when they decided to do the unbundling and create Swarm. And yeah, they kind of did weird move when they did that. What happened is they decided to announce it, but when they announced it, they didn't release Swarm directly. They just said, oh, it's coming. We're starting to make moves and make changes to the Foursquare app. And then the Foursquare app went from a pretty nice and well-designed app, but a pretty cluttered app, to something pretty messy.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that necessarily. So what I remember of the old application is that basically the two services functionality were constantly fighting with each other. And with every major version of the Foursquare app, they randomly decided, oh, well, now it's time for this service to take the forefront and take over the main UI. So I know like at one point you launch Foursquare and it was like a basically like your Facebook timeline, except for location-based events. And then they completely changed their mind, like, with the next version. And then, and I could be saying this in the wrong order. I don't remember exactly the version history of Foursquare. But, like, you'd show up, like, with the next update. And then all of a sudden, it would be, like, a list of things nearby that you should do. And it would keep changing, like, every major version. And you felt like there was this tension within Foursquare. Like, well, which UI do we want to make the main one? And, like, how do we make a UI with both of these sets of functionality together without making a terrible app? And it turns out you can't really do that. It was incredibly frustrating because the focus of the app kept swinging back and forth like a pendulum, sort of. So they announced... go ahead.
Oh, pardon me. So, and that, like, swinging back and forth kind of put in the public there are, like, internal conflicts, I would say. I don't know if there was internal conflict, but doing that on a big app for a big service means that there's people that think that it should be done in a certain way, and other people think that it should be done in another way. And doing that, like, swinging of focus was kind of messy for the user.
Well, it's like they're trying to figure out what their identity is, and the thing is, like, the product that they want to be relies on check-ins to exist, right? So you need to continue to get check-ins for the data to continue to be accurate. But you also want recommendations to be available to users who only care about recommendations and all that stuff. But you sort of have these two things which can't share the same UI. They demand two different experiences. Otherwise, it just gets messy. 2 weeks later, after Swarm was announced, it actually launched. And a lot of people launched the app, they didn't like what they saw, and they stopped using Foursquare altogether. Now, I should point out that I think that the Swarm app was actually better than what they had beforehand, at least for the check-in functionality. Obviously, it wasn't better for the recommendation functionality because it wasn't there. But it was better and more efficient at the check-in stuff than the Foursquare app ever was. Do you agree?
Yeah. They, like, focus and streamline the check-in process.
Right. And they had, like, I don't remember what the name of their engine was, but they had spent a crazy amount of resources to have this thing so that when you launch the app, it already has a very, very good idea of where you're trying to check in. So when you press the check-in button, it's already pre-populated with where it thinks you're checking in.
And I can tell you it's pretty accurate.
Yeah, it's amazing. But they made one tragic mistake when they were communicating all this stuff. So as you pointed out earlier, Swarm launched like 2 weeks after they introduced the thing. But the actual redesigned Foursquare app, which was the recommendation engine app, that didn't launch until late July. So users complained at how bad the integration was between Swarm and the old version of Foursquare. But the integration wasn't there because they weren't putting their resources towards the old app. They were putting their resources towards the new app, and the new app wasn't ready until July. So everybody felt like they were getting this unjustified app migration, and they had to wait months to get a clear idea of what they were actually migrating towards, which is sort of not a great way of doing it. I think the end product is better, but the way they communicated it was complete garbage, and that's what screwed them over.
Yeah, and I remember that I was pretty pissed off at that point. Like, I think I'm a pretty good proponent of that Foursquare. I love that service, but I'm sure you recall our discussion about that point. At that point, that I just wanted to stop using it and just look at location-based app that will do the same without recommendation.
Right. Well, the thing is, I believe your opinion changed when Foursquare launched actually their recommendation app, and then it was fantastic. It was really, really good.
Yeah, of course. Like, when the new Foursquare app launched, the redesign was awesome and still love it. Like, every time I meet one of my good friends that I studied with here in Montreal, the first thing I do is we go downtown and I pull out Foursquare.
Right. And as someone who does, like, annual travel to Japan, I love Foursquare. Like, I've been using Foursquare for years to, like, plan a list of places I want to go. And I think the new Foursquare is even better for that kind of stuff. And I'm really, really happy that it got as good as it did. But the problem is that everybody who jumped ship in protest in the month of May never got to, well, they could have installed the app, but they were so pissed off at Foursquare for no good reason that they never used that app, and they never had the chance to see what they were really aiming towards in their unbundling experience. Now, there were some benefits from splitting the app. Namely, each team could focus on features that were specific to their app that wouldn't necessarily have made sense for a united app. So Swarm in particular, they have the Today widget now on iOS 8, where you can just check in from the notification center without even launching the app. And they have a Pebble app. And I think that if the app was still combined, it's not that it would have prevented them from doing it, because Foursquare has had check-in widgets on Android for a while.
And they had a Pebble app for a while, too.
Right. But the thing is, like, there would have been this tension. Well, do we want our Today widget to be cool things near you? Do we want our Today widget to be a check-in thing? And they would be arguing about that all the time. With this, they can just say, yeah, actually for our app, this makes sense, so we can go towards that direction and doing it. And there's no internal fighting about it and bickering about what the right thing to do is. Foursquare finally got around to actually making an iPad version, which I had been asking for years, because when I'm planning out my Japan trips, I love to do it on the big screen. And for years, the Foursquare app was phone only. And finally, like, I think last fall, they launched an iPad version, and it's fantastic.
This reminds me that I need to install it. I think I'll do it, like, now.
It's really good.
Because, like, I love the new Foursquare app on my phone, but I can imagine, like, planning stuff or just browsing around knowing that you are going in, like, going downtown with friends and you want to try a new place. Well, like, I spoke a lot about my move to Montreal, and, like, every time I'm going downtown with friends, I just want to try a new place.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you could always get by on the iPad by using the web version, but the thing is, the web version was designed for, like, 20-inch screens, so it looked really, really cramped on the iPad, and it looks great in their new app, and everything just works how you'd like it to. So I can definitely say that my usage of Swarm and Foursquare has increased since the app has split, because it's just less frustrating of an experience. You're never fighting to try to figure out where the hell the check-in went.
Pardon me. By the way, I do have a question too. You were speaking about how the Swarm app is way better than it was when it was bundled with the Foursquare app.
Yes.
But I know that you're using a third-party client.
Yes, so, I am.
Are you still using that third-party client?
Well, I use it mostly when, first of all, my third-party client broke. It didn't break because of the API. It just broke because the developer stopped updating it and something broke in the app, and I just can't use it anymore.
Oh, that's bad.
Right. So I can still use the favorites that I have plugged into the app just fine, but, like, I can't add new favorites or modify my list of favorites at all. So it's sort of useless now. So I'm mostly using Swarm these days. And of course, the third party client I was using was just, it was called Fast Check-In, and it let me check in really, really quickly when I was at some place, but it didn't let me see where my friends were. And in Japan, this was particularly interesting because I have friends who work in specific places, and I could see if they were checked in at work, and if they were, then I could call them up and say, hey, you want to go do stuff after work? And that is actually fairly useful, so I couldn't rely on my third-party client for that. So the Swarm app, I don't use it full-time, but I use it enough when I am around other people who use it. Does that answer your question?
Of course.
Okay. So let's go to the lesson to learn from Swarm and Foursquare's mistakes. I guess the first thing is they should have probably waited until all their apps were ready to launch everything at once. I realize that there are probably a bunch of reasons why that didn't make business sense for them to do it. But in an ideal world, I think that a lot of their loss of users and negative connotation of what they did would have been lost if they had just launched everything at once, or at least made it clear to users what they were aiming for, because it was just like, one of these days we're going to launch an app called Swarm, and here's a screenshot, and someday, not telling you when, we're going to update Foursquare, and we're going to have this cool new Foursquare app, but we're not going to tell you anything about it until July. Not a great idea.
Yeah, indeed. But I think even then, like, they did the right thing. The unbundling helped Foursquare, and Foursquare went through a small rebranding for the recommendation app, and it did what it had to do.
Oh, definitely. The end result is really great. The problem is how they went about executing that strategy over the couple months. The migration of that couple months was just really messy. But let's go into the practical advice for people who actually have apps. Pretend you're pitching your app to someone, and if you find yourself that you're explaining things that could plausibly be separate services, in the mobile space, those should probably be separate apps. And let's be frank, in 2015, if you're not doing things mobile first, you're doing them wrong.
That's a good advice. I love it. Yeah, and speaking about that, like if you are having issues pitching your app because there's two main focus, a mobile app should only have one main focus, one main feature. Not one main feature, but one focus in it. And the problem
one main feature is more like Apple Watch apps.
Yeah, indeed. But one focus is what burned Foursquare before they did the unbundling.
Right. In Foursquare's case, they started with only the check-in functionality, like when they originally launched, I mean. They only had the check-in functionality. And once they had built up that sufficient database of check-ins, they could actually go ahead and add recommendations to their app. But the mistake was not to make that a separate app from the start. Because they waited until 2014 to unbundle, that's why you get like all these change-averse people who are suddenly crying on Twitter about their app being broken. And of course, as I said, the way they handled the migration wasn't great, so that didn't help either. Let's move on to another very popular example, which is the Facebook app and Messenger, which is basically the main character for today's episode. So in 2011, Facebook introduced the Messenger app on iOS and on Android. And as the name implies, it was dedicated to messaging within Facebook. But messaging stayed available for a while within the main Facebook app. And then in April 2013, jumping 2 years there for no reason, they announced Facebook Home, which was, it seems so long ago now, and I completely forgot about the HTC First until this week when I was researching this.
But Cersei, remember, for a second, was like, what the hell is it? Oh, wait, they're OS.
Yeah, so as you may remember, Facebook Home is an alternate launcher that they made for Android, and they shipped a phone called the HTC First, which had this pre-installed, and it was this weird launcher-ish thing.
Yeah, it was a combo between the launch. It was most not even just a launcher. It was a skin on top of Android, right? Because you didn't add the launcher. You just add the lock screen,
The lock screen was basically Facebook Paper. It's basically that same experience. And then once you unlock... No, wait.
I wouldn't compare it to Facebook Paper, because Facebook Paper is pretty awesome. I would just put it in the way, like, take all of the pictures that you currently see in your newsfeed in Facebook and put them on your lock screen, and you can swipe from left to right to see each one. So you'll have the full screen photo on your lock screen, and then you'll be able to say, like, 10% liked this, 20% commented on this, and then you pressed on comments, and you were else going to the full screen comment view. So it was pretty weird to have your news feed on your lock screen.
Right. And I believe, I'm not sure of this, but I believe like you could swipe to go to the full Facebook app or to Messenger or to an app launcher. And those are like the three options, I believe. But again, Facebook Home is dead, so you shouldn't worry too much about it. And it's not very important to the whole thing. We're just adding this in for context. But one of the things that launched with Facebook Home was this neat little feature called Chat Heads. And Chat Heads, it took like half the year for them to actually get introduced into other things that are not Facebook Home. But they were rolled into the Facebook app itself on iOS and into Messenger on Android. Except on Android, there's this neat thing where Chat Heads are accessible from any application, not just the Facebook Messenger app, which of course would be stupid, because if you want to use Chat Heads within Messenger, well, you're already in Messenger, so it will just be the crazy nesting Messenger of Messengers.
Yeah, that was pretty weird in Facebook and this Facebook app itself. But a great jailbreak tweak did that. Like, they did the iOS implementation of what was possible on Android. It was pretty neat, that tweak.
Later on, the messaging button in the Facebook main app began redirecting to Messenger if the user had it installed, which was a sign of things to come, because in April 2014, Facebook pulled out messaging from the Facebook app entirely, requiring users to install Messenger if they wanted messaging at all. And if Swarm was any indication, people were very, very pissed.
But in the Facebook's case, they kind of warned people by doing the transition period, which I will call the Facebook app is redeemed to you to the Messenger app. Here's a sign. You have it installed. You should use it because things are going to change. Like, there were red flags everywhere compared to Foursquare.
Yes, this is true.
But obviously, it causes shitstorm.
Yes, one of the notable things is the Android version of Messenger. People had to actually go through the permission screen because on Android, when you install an application, it gives you the screen with all the permissions that an app is granted on install. And on Android, those permissions were sort of a little bit, more than they needed.
Yeah, and we know the nickname that I have for this screen is like the press OK screen. Like, don't read and press OK. And then people started to
read it, which is sort of a problem. Well, it's not a problem because it's for security reasons. But the problem is the way that Android does permissions, and this could be a whole episode on itself, but let's not go too deep. You can ask for specific things, but they're all grouped together on the permission screen. So it could say you're asking for system privileges, which allows you X thing and Y thing, which are undesirable, but really you're after Z thing, which is also in that group. And there's going to be no distinction of that to the user, because otherwise you would have this gigantic list of things that people wouldn't read, which is sort of how that screen turns out anyway. But because people started reading, they started getting freaked out at all the access that they were giving Facebook, and people refused to install the Messenger app because they were terrified of what Facebook would do. The irony is that the permissions for Facebook Messenger are the exact same permissions for the official Facebook app that was already installed on their phone. So Facebook wasn't actually gaining any additional access that they didn't already have to your phone. Congratulations on the freak out, everyone.
And if I recall correctly, it is when they decided to put Facebook Messenger as... they added the option to put Facebook Messenger as the SMS client on Android, too.
Right. So then it could read your SMSs, and people were like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, but the Facebook app was able to do that beforehand. But it was a little bit more subtle in the way they did it.
Yeah, because when you're updating, you're just like, yeah, whatever, give me the update. But now, because it was a new app, people were paying attention, and people didn't like what they saw. So the big question is, well, why did Facebook feel compelled to move everyone over to Messenger, a separate app? Well, one of the first things is messaging is a tentpole feature of the Facebook app. So for most of its users, it should be accessible from anywhere in the app. You don't want to be like in events and then not have messaging be available if you got a reply, because that would be a bad experience. Chatheads, funnily enough, were a nice little remedy to that solution, because you had a little floating dingus on the screen at all times. And you could just tap it, and you could just quickly flick it away if you wanted to get back to what you were doing, and everything was great. So why didn't they stick with chat heads built into the Facebook app? Because wouldn't that be more elegant? And I actually personally believe that is a more elegant solution, at least within the Facebook app. So first thing, Facebook wanted to make Messenger a thing that could be used in isolation without even having a Facebook account. And it is tricky to convince people that that is the case when it's built into the main Facebook app. You sort of want to separate the Messenger brand from the Facebook brand. And there's been some commentary with regards to, well, Facebook is not very good with regards to privacy stuff, so you don't want the main Facebook app to be the hub for messaging. You want it to be the separate app, which is known for being a safe conduit for private communication. I'm sort of skeptical that that actually works, but
yeah, like if they can only read your messages, but they're still like read inside of a Facebook app, so I'm guessing that, and you gave them access to your SMS and all your messaging information on your phone, so I guess it's more a feeling that you're blocking them than a real block on the application.
It's just trying to make people like more trustworthy of Facebook because it's isolated in this Messenger app and not in the main Facebook app. Again, not sure it works, but sure, whatever. Funnily enough, starting December 2012, in certain regions, they actually did allow Messenger to work isolated from a Facebook account. And now I believe you actually just can go download the Messenger app and without a Facebook account, just use it no matter where you are in the world.
It was. I would like to know. Like, I don't know if you know that, but I'm pretty interested to know if the way they do it is they make you create a Facebook account without knowing it's a Facebook account. So they kind of create a shadow account.
With no user data.
Yeah, something like that. That you'll be easily transferable to the full Facebook experience.
That would be actually very interesting to know. And if anybody at Facebook is listening to this podcast, I would love it if you could tell me at least privately or something. Next up, messaging apps are such a competitive sphere that having it tied to the greater Facebook app limits the speed at which it can be iterated upon. And especially with a monstrous app like the Facebook one, you would imagine the conflicts would pile up very, very quickly. So this is indirectly good to the users because it means that the app can get better faster, but it's no direct advantage to the user, I would say. Point number three, the Facebook app is untenably large. And when I say untenably large, I am not exaggerating because it was so untenably large that in late 2012, the Facebook app was so big on Android that it refused to run on certain versions of Android.
Really? Wow. Yes.
So it outgrew the size of the linear ALEC buffer, which holds information about all the methods in an application, and they had to find a way to hack and patch it at runtime, which is beautiful, and there is a blog post about this on the Facebook engineering blog, which is in the show notes.
Wow.
You can go read this and cry.
Yeah, when you have to patch the Java runtime, you need to cry.
Yeah. And of course, if an app becomes untenably large, it becomes easier to go back to the home screen to get to messaging than it is to navigate the app's own UI to actually find messaging. And if Facebook didn't have their own dedicated app, then it would open an opportunity for competitors to steal messaging away from them, which is probably the biggest reason why they actually did the Facebook Messenger thing in the first place. And there is an article in the show notes from TechCrunch called Kill the Hamburger Menu, which also goes into detail about how hamburger menus, which are those crazy three-line menus that you see in so many apps that are disgusting and should die. The Facebook app had been using one of those for a really, really long time. And until last year, when the Messenger thing happened, they were still doing that. And it buried a whole bunch of functionality in it. Even now, I believe the Facebook app has way too much functionality that should be separated out into separate apps. And I know people are going to hate me for saying that. But yeah.
Yeah. Allow me to go on a small tangent here about the hamburger menu. But did you saw the, I don't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, but at DubDub, one of the Apple engineers, like, went on a big tangent about hamburger menu and why are they so bad for UX and UI purposes. And, like, it might seem that it's easier or better for your user, but it's like, but that guy, like, took about 10 to 15 minutes of his DubDub presentation to speak about the fucking hamburger menu.
So if you're going to WWDC, please buy that guy a beer or two or three because he deserves it.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, well, to go on that tangent, Facebook is a big, big web company. You can argue that it is the last big web company until before the mobile revolution came along. And it has a crazy amount of shit in its sidebar. And their idea was, well, we need to have all that crazy shit on the sidebar in our mobile app as well, and maybe those things should have been split out into separate apps instead of being all wedged into the Facebook app and making it so big that it doesn't launch anymore on Android. So one of those things on the sidebar is Facebook Groups. And funnily enough, Facebook Groups is also available on the App Store as a separate app right now. It hasn't been removed from the main Facebook app, but it would not surprise me if it did. And if you actually go to Facebook's developer page on the App Store, Facebook has like 15 to 20 apps right now on the App Store. It's sort of surprising until you actually realize it.
Yeah, they recently launched a Facebook page app, if I recall correctly, or admin page app.
Oh, that's been around for a really long time.
Oh, really? Maybe it was like a new update or something, because I saw news about it recently.
Yeah, they have the Facebook Pages app. They have Facebook for Business. So if you work at a big company which has its own instance of Facebook, which is confusing to me why you would want that, but you can go...
What? Its own instance of Facebook?
Yeah, there's Facebook for Enterprise right now, which is... It sounds like the most garbage thing in the world. But hey, yeah, if you go to the App Store, you can see all the crazy stuff that Facebook is doing. And then there are all of these like weird side projects which have nothing to do with Facebook, which are also on the Facebook App Store account. Very strange. So where are we going with all of this? Well, Messenger got some changes 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that. And I'd like to start with this quote from Ben Evans. All software expands until it includes messaging. New, all messaging expands until it includes software. And that brings me to Messenger Platform, which was introduced at the F8 conference late last month. You may be thinking, like, why the hell would you want to build a platform into a messaging app? And the answer is, well, people actually, like, use their phones to communicate with other people, and messaging is a big part of that, and they spend a lot of time in the messaging app, so why not build a platform on top of that? And East Asia, of course, our good friends, they have been doing this for years, of course, because they're ahead of everyone. WeChat, Line, and KakaoTalk out of Korea are all building platforms around their messaging apps and have been doing so for a really long time. And Facebook is just now realizing that this is a thing that maybe they should do. This is going to be controversial for a lot of people because it's going to make the Facebook Messenger seem like as much of a monster as the Facebook app is right now. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but right now, from what I remember from the F8 conference, like the Messenger platform is kind of a privilege or VIP experience for people integrating Facebook. Like if you share from a GIF app to Messenger, you have a VIP experience in a way.
There's a lot of things. Well, right now they've launched like two separate ways. Three, I guess, ways of integrating into this platform, and we're going to go through them. Part one is commerce, and I'm going to go through this because it's not really a thing yet, but it's coming. Businesses can now register for Messenger accounts. This is also a thing online. There's an application called Line At, which you can download and you can create business accounts for. And basically it means that if you are a store, for example, or a pizza place or whatever, you can have your own Messenger account and people can message you and they can interact. Right now it seems to be with either a bot or a real life person at the other end. Bots are probably going to be more interesting in the long run because I don't think there's going to be someone manning a Messenger account for many like local businesses and all that stuff, but it could be interesting. The more interesting thing about this is for e-commerce. So if you have an e-commerce website, like let's say the Apple Store, they're not doing this, but let's just pretend Apple Store decides we're going all in on this e-commerce on a Facebook Messenger platform thing, they can offer enhanced receipts. And enhanced receipts, you just click this little checkbox that says sent to Messenger, and you get effectively what is order tracking right there in a Messenger thread built into the Facebook app.
I would have seen something more like you text the business or their Facebook bot to order something via the Facebook Messenger app.
Not yet. That's actually probably coming because like Line does that. WeChat does that.
Oh, it does. Wow.
I'm honestly
surprised.
Those are huge in the companies where, in the countries where that actually exists. Facebook is just very late to the game.
And I guess they want to bring that to the West.
Well, right. So that's the first step. what's interesting, Benedict Evans in his blog post about this, which is in the show notes, sort of talks about how this is a way for Facebook to turn the notification center into a platform. And the thing for this is, well, first of all, if you use this e-commerce thing, people, no matter if they're on iOS or Android, get the same experience because it's sort of this Facebook Messenger runtime or whatever. But you can make your messages actionable with little buttons that say, okay, I want to change my order, I want to do certain thing. And in theory, what people are speculating about is, well, those buttons could go directly into the actionable notifications available on iOS and on Android, and then those could get transferred along to Android Wear and Apple Watch. So you could basically use Messenger Platform to get like free cross-platform mini applications built into notifications, which could be a big deal. And it would mean that people would only have to install Messenger to get that behavior and not different apps for each service which wants to have this kind of thing.
Or from each store, for example.
Like, I'm sorry, but aside from the Apple Store, I'm not installing your store's app. Sorry. So it could be fairly interesting if Facebook makes the most of this and if people get on board. The problem, of course, for Apple and other platform owners is that Facebook is the owner of that platform and not them, and they are not likely to like that. Of course, they can always just reject the Facebook Messenger app if they want to do that, but I'm not sure they want to do that. So that is sort of a peek into what that commerce angle could turn into. You could just be able to make decisions about things and have little applets basically live in your notification center, which I think could be interesting.
There's potential.
Right. There's potential, but it has to be used correctly, and that is sort of the problem where Facebook sort of becomes an issue for some people.
Yeah, but I would think that feature would be pretty useful for small retailers.
Yes. Also very interesting about this is, of course, if you check that little checkbox and send it to Messenger, that means Facebook gets information about what you're buying on the internet, so there's also that. It can be turned into good value for them.
Yay, more ads.
Yay. Part two. Turns out, Facebook Messenger has an app store now.
Oh my god. That boggles my mind. I don't know how they are getting approved on the app store with that.
So
I don't know.
Let me explain how it works first. It confused me at first because I thought that this was third-party code that was built into the Messenger app, and that is not what you're getting. It would technically be possible with Facebook's own React Native framework to actually build that into their app because they use JavaScript for that framework, and they could just get JavaScript files over the cloud and then load them into their apps and get full experiences. But that's not what they're doing.
Yeah, because you're not allowed to, I don't know, like compile over the air Objective-C code or just run Swift code.
Right. Competing messaging apps have had something like this for a while. The big example in the US is Kik, which does all of this with web apps. And WeChat apparently does the same thing. The problem is that web apps are very limited in what they can do. So instead, they are using native applications, and I'm not even sure if this is on Android yet. I know it's on iOS.
I haven't heard anything about Android yet.
Right.
That's a good point you mentioned.
Yeah. So in behavior, these are very similar to iOS extensions, but they sort of don't use the iOS extension architecture at all. In fact, they just don't. These are normal iOS apps that are separate from the Messenger app, but they have some form of Messenger integration. So there are two kinds of Messenger integration right now. There's basic sharing, which basically allows any app out there to share content to the Facebook Messenger app. And it is very confusing to me what the difference is between this and just using the iOS share sheet and the Messenger extension, except that it adds the icon and the name of your app in the corner. That is apparently the only thing I can tell is different about this integration. So it doesn't seem very worthwhile to do it. But there's optimized sharing, which is the one that Facebook is pushing people towards, and the one that pisses me off so much, in which they incentivize developers to make their app exclusive to the Messenger platform in exchange for exposure and discovery in the Messenger app. Meaning that you are installing apps which will do absolutely nothing if you don't have Facebook Messenger installed.
And the first app that we saw doing that had like specific version of the same app. So you were able to download the normal app that you are able to share, for example, GIFs. But I know they showed an example of a Gifty, or I don't remember which GIF that, but it was a GIF app.
Well, Gifmoji in particular, they have Gifmoji normal on the App Store, and they have Gifmoji for Messenger.
Oh, exactly.
The same app, except it has every other social service removed from the app. You can only share to Facebook Messenger. But that version of the app is promoted within the Messenger app. And if you were to make an app that doesn't have exclusivity with Facebook Messenger, then you get slightly reduced functionality in the Messenger app. Plus, you're less likely to be featured. And of course, being featured in Facebook Messenger right now is probably bringing in lots and lots of money. And of course, I am personally touched by this because I'm working on an app to make animated GIFs, right? So the question is, well, do I want to make an exclusive version of my app which only works with Facebook Messenger? And the answer is no, that would be a shitty experience, so I'm not going to do that. The problem is I could make a hell of a lot of money by being built into that list of apps. And I'm probably very dumb for not doing it and not going the cash grab route, but I feel like it's something I shouldn't do because it's just a bad decision. I should explain what the optimized sharing is, though. Optimized sharing is exactly the same as basic sharing, except there's an install button next to your app name instead of just the app name. And there's a reply button, which means that if you post a dumb GIF from App X, then if your friend has App X also installed, he can just click the reply button and go immediately to that app and choose another dumb GIF to send you in reply. Without needing to go through the app menu or whatever.
So when you're using the optimized sharing app, you're just dancing between apps?
Yes.
Which is weird.
It is. And the other thing is, like, in your home screen, you're going to have a folder full of apps that do absolutely nothing except are basically extensions for the Messenger app.
Yeah, and I'm guessing they use, like, URL schemes to just dump back and forth.
Yeah, probably something like that.
Okay, that's... Wow, honestly...
They don't... might even just do something stupid like bring up a web server in the background that has the image and then just send the URL via the URL scheme and then it would pull it. And then after the period for, background completion,
yeah.
Multitasking, after that's done, well, the web server closes and it comes back and yeah. Probably something stupid like that.
Yeah, honestly, like, it's been out there for a while, like maybe a couple of weeks, and still don't know what to think about that. I'm sure, like, most of the examples they showed us during the conference are free apps that are kind of already living because of Facebook Messenger. I'm sure they want to be used and shared by... any people not using any service, but there's no I don't know, I don't have any, like, they don't have a notes app integrated with Facebook Messenger. It's pretty focused for messaging feature, like sending funny GIFs, funny emojis, funny drawings, and it feels weird to me that those features are not in the Facebook Messenger app. And are, like, in other apps.
Well, the thing that it allows Facebook to do... So the big reason Facebook would do something like this is they're saying to developers, okay, if you have a great idea, build it on the Facebook platform. We have 800 million people who are using Facebook Messenger. You are automatically exposed to 800 million people who can share that thing you just did, as opposed to being one of God knows how many applications on the App Store and not being findable by anyone. So the proposition of, here, we have this category of apps, and if you follow our rules, we might feature you, and then automatically you are out there in front of 800 million people who use Facebook Messenger. That is an enticing proposition, especially now that the store only has like 40 apps, right? So if I could be 41st in that list of apps, then it would be very, very enticing, and I would be very, very compelled to do the thing where they say, release an exclusive version of your application, which only works with Facebook Messenger. The problem I have as a developer is now I have two SKUs in my apps to maintain. One, that's a problem. Two, what do I charge for that app? Do I charge less than what I charge for the full version? What do people want to upgrade to that version?
Or make it free because it's Facebook Messenger? Like, people expect it to be free because it's Facebook. Facebook is free. I'm sure there's an expectation that...
Well, I'm not going to make my app free, sorry.
No, I know, but...
I'm not going to go very far if I make my app free.
I know that, but, like, the old Facebook experience is free. So I'm sure there's, like, you'll press install and you'll go to the App Store and you see, like, $4.99. You're like, what the fuck? I won't install this one. I'll just take the free one.
Well, let's be entirely hypothetical here because I don't even have pricing information finalized for my app. So this is entirely hypothetical. But let's say full version of my app, EOS, is $3.
I thought you would say, like, it was $20. Because
it's $20. And then on Facebook, I make it free. No. What if the full version of my app is $3 and I make a Messenger version? Well, what do I charge for that? Do I charge less because it can only share to Facebook?
Or you can share more because it's a feature that it can only be used with Facebook Messenger.
It can only be used with Facebook, so it's $5 now. Yeah, I don't know. It feels kind of dirty to me. But the thing is, like, I know I am losing a bunch of money by not doing the stupid Facebook integration thing. But it just feels so dirty to me that I don't want to do it. And it could be, like, huge for me. I could make, like, a bunch of money. I could be, like, top of the featured. I have enough confidence to do that. I don't necessarily want to spend the time to actually, like, screw around with their integration because it would just make me launch even later. But like...
You know what? Like, I'm sure people will hate what I'm about to say, but right now Facebook is telling developers, like, use your great ideas, like... Bring those great ideas to our Facebook users base and, like, put it in Facebook Messenger. But they are still maintaining a fucking, like, Instagram app, and they are still having, like, WhatsApp, another, like, messaging app separately. Like, if they want one, maybe, like, one centralized and one pillar, which is Messenger, they should put all of those information, all of those workflows, ideas, experience, in the same pillar. So you should be able to do the same with Instagram. Like, they should focus more. Like, if they want to put it in Messenger, they should put everything related to Messenger in Messenger, and that's it. Or move it to WhatsApp because they bought WhatsApp, whatever.
Well, WhatsApp's feature set is much more limited because it has to be compatible with SMS. So the way I see it is, like, Facebook has two plays for messaging. They have the low end with feature phones and WhatsApp, and they have the high end with smartphones and Messenger. And I guess it's a smart strategy. I mean, WhatsApp is sort of garbage. I don't really like it. I would like to see it go away, but I understand why it exists and why people use it, because they're on feature phones or they're in markets where Facebook Messenger isn't necessarily something that they can get onto.
Okay. But I get that, but it's kind of weird too at the same time.
Yeah. And the thing that really confuses me is, again, I use the standard iOS share sheet in my application. I'm not going to have, like, share as GIF, share as URL, and then, like, share to Facebook Messenger as a third option in my share menu. Like, I already feel bad that I have two options because of stupid share sheet limitations in the OS. Like, I'm not gonna add a third option to that menu just because, like, Facebook says so. And, like, another thing I was considering, so WeChat is huge in China, and of course China is a huge market. Would I get more money if I just, like, asked people to translate my app into Chinese and then, like, had the WeChat extension in my thing? Would that be more beneficial to me than actually supporting this Facebook Messenger thing?
I guess that could be the first move to do and then see the result of it.
Like, I really don't want to have an app that is exclusive to Facebook Messenger. It just it screams desperate to me.
Yeah, it's...
And, like, I want to make an app where people can make GIFs and then share them with any messaging thing, and I think it like reduces the value of the app if you can only share with one message. I don't know. It's just really, really messy, and I obviously I don't even know what I think about it right now.
Yeah, you feel a little bit torn.
Right, because I see the cash. Like, I see it. It's like, yeah, integrate with Facebook and there will be tons of money in your pocket. But the other thing is like, yeah, but it makes your app bad in the process.
Yeah, it's one, integrate with Facebook. Two, three, profit.
Yeah, basically. So that is about where I am in this process right now. And I'm not sure how this is going to play out in the long run. Right now, I know that 1.0 is going to launch without any specific integration with Messenger. I'm going to look at the basic integration thing because if I can at least get like my little icon and the name of my app there, that is better than just having GIFs go directly into the Facebook thing with no attribution. At the same time, like, I don't know if it will seem desperate if I even have that attribution, right?
Yeah, like, you mean like even if they see it, like, they will have to manually go find your application by yourself.
Like, the thing is, do you want everything you share with my app on Messenger to also be an ad for my app? Like, that seems more appropriate if your app is free. Of course, my app isn't going to be free. But, like, that's the kind of thing you do if you want to have a network effect, like, make your app big. The thing is, my app is paid up front, so the network effect is automatically limited by how many people will pay price X for my application. And also, do people feel comfortable having each share to Messenger being a little ad for my app? Like, I don't know about that stuff. Like, I don't feel comfortable when I use an application and it pre-populates like the share tweet thing with a hashtag. I just delete that every time because I don't care. But in the same way, that's sort of what you're doing if you do the basic sharing integration thing.
Yeah, and it could be seen by your friend as a little bragging, not by the creator of the app, which is you, but by the friend that bought it and then is sharing them stuff via Facebook Messenger. They're like, oh, I'm using that fancy app and you're rich and I don't have money to buy a coffee or an
well
app.
I don't think that's as bad as like driving a BMW or something like that. Sorry, I've been listening to Neutral all week, so.
Yep. I guess we can maybe end on that question that I have is, do you see right now an app that could be unbundled and make the case for it? Like right now I'm thinking of the most apps I'm using right now. And the case I'm seeing right now is Twitter, but Twitter, the way
yeah,
that they
I was
buy
gonna say that too.
Feature, like they added Vine in an app. They bought Periscope and they put it in a certain app, like Periscope.
Well, the immediate thing that jumps out at me is, and it's been rumored for years, but it hasn't happened yet, is direct messaging. There have been rumors for a while now that Twitter is going to split out its direct messages into a separate app, which is focused on direct messages, which, again, this is all based around messaging. Like, wow, it's like the big hot topic right now on mobile. It's not a coincidence. But like these rumors go back to what, 2012, something like that. And it still hasn't come out. Like recently they added group DMs in the official Twitter app. So you can do that. But
the big question is, did they finally repair DMs with links?
Yeah, apparently it works now.
Oh, wow.
It does.
Ooh. So maybe we'll see that like direct message app.
I don't know. We'll see. The Twitter app is just such a mess that I don't even really want to think about it anymore. But
and another feature they had recently is DMing photos too, if I recall correctly.
That was a couple months ago.
Yeah, like, it was before groups, but that was the first feature that marks the comeback of DMs.
Right. Which still doesn't work in third-party clients. Yay!
No, they do work, but it's a feature.
Yeah, I guess. Let me think. Other stuff that could be unbundled. I don't use very many apps on either of my devices, so I'm sort of limited in what I can say here. Let's see.
Because, like, for me, Facebook was the main example. Like, on if I look on my iPad, the other big application that I use is YouTube, which is part of the Google experience, but it's in its own app, so...
Yeah.
I guess if they want to maybe create a more TV-like experience for YouTube, they could just create a, like, subscription app, like, meaning you see your subscription from YouTube, like, your channel subscription in a separate app, and yeah, it's only for that.
I don't think that warrants a separate application.
But it might be good when they do a TV move. Like a bigger TV move for YouTube.
I'm not convinced they're going to do that.
Yeah, but...
I think YouTube as it is right now is perfectly suited for what the future is going to be. Like, the future of television, as much as I hate it, is probably more like YouTube than... More like YouTube is now than any kind of theoretical change they could do to YouTube.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But even my, like, when I started talking about Twitter was my main example. But, like, when I started to speak about YouTube, it was, like, I was stretching it a little bit. Because I guess what the big example I can see is I can imagine in the future, like, whatever, paying or just enjoying, like, free with ads, internet TV. Let's put it that way. And then I don't pay for channel, but I subscribe and I want to see the latest videos every time when I turn on the TV from those channels. Like, I would like to see the new car videos and then the funny whatever BuzzFeed video about 10 things I need to know about X and
17 ways to supercharge your YouTube usage.
Yeah, whatever. But I can see, like, this subscribing effect be applied to not revolutionize, but maybe re-energize the TV industry?
I don't know about that.
But I think we'll stop there because we're going on a, like, TV tangent now.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about TV someday. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So if you want to get in touch with us, well, we're on Twitter. The show itself is @limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast on Twitter.
And you can find the show note at limitlesspossibility.net/12.
Yeah, for this episode. The show as a whole is available on the internet at limitlesspossibility.net. I am on Twitter at Sakurina. That's SAKURINA. And you are?
At Lukonosh. LUCCONOUCHE.
And we'll see you on the next episode.
See you in 2 weeks.